Hello and welcome to the Sydney Institute podcast. The Institute is Australia's premier current affairs forum. Every week, contemporary political, social, cultural and economic issues are explored at the Institute through dialogue and discussion. This podcast was recorded recently at a members' forum in the city of Sydney. Thanks for listening, and for more information about the Sydney Institute, please visit www.thesydneyinstitute.com.au. We hope you enjoy this event.
Thanks for coming along tonight, where Gabrielle Upton makes a welcome return to the Sydney Institute. She last spoke to the Institute, as I recall, at the Gallipoli Club on the issue of housing. You know our speaker well, so I will introduce her briefly. She studied law, did an MBA, worked in banking overseas and then again in law, MP for Vaucluse since 2011. And after the election, her election to Parliament, she quickly became a parliamentary secretary and then a minister in both the Farrell and the Blair and the Baird governments covering such areas as sport and family and community services. But last year, Ms Upton was promoted to the significant position of Attorney General in the coalition government here in New South Wales, and it's great to have the AG here tonight talking on the topic Justice Must Serve. Gabrielle Upton, you're very welcome. Thank you.
Well, good evening, everybody. I see some faces I recognise in the audience, and Gerard, of course, and Anne. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak again to the Institute, and I welcome that opportunity as always. So, my speech tonight is entitled Justice Must Serve. Our justice system in New South Wales has a long and a proud history. It has evolved over 200 years and has inherited many of the common law principles and processes from the United Kingdom. It's the nation's first, obviously, and the biggest and undoubtedly the best. But we are striving to make it even better. Tonight, I want to share how and why we need to do just that. Our society is based on the rule of law, which means it's applied to everyone equally by an independent judiciary. The rule of law is vital because it helps protect people's rights and property, keeps our community safe, and supports economic growth. Just as our justice system is important, it's also fundamental. And that's why it excites emotions as well as intellect. It reflects our core values and our beliefs. It allows us to deal in good faith with one another and get on with our day-to-day lives. And although it is steeped in tradition, our justice system also needs to be modern, it needs to be effective, it needs to be efficient. And I always thought it was curious that as a community we demand a modern health system, a modern education system, but we don't demand the same of our justice system. And maybe we are less demanding of it because it's steeped in tradition and it seems to have a certain kind of magic power about it. Noted American legal scholar Mark Galanta quipped that just as health is not found primarily in hospitals or knowledge in schools, so justice is not primarily found in official justice-dispensing institutions. This important perspective challenges traditional notions of the New South Wales justice system. However, it is a perspective we must embrace. It recasts justice as a community service by putting people at its centre. It means understanding where, when, and how people want to access justice services and how we can best provide them. It means making justice fast, fair, and accessible for all. However, experience says that when many people do come in contact with our formal justice system in New South Wales, they can be disappointed. And I'm not just talking about those who are found guilty in our criminal courts. It really doesn't seem to matter if that contact is with the civil justice system or the criminal justice system, neither serves them well. And this is why it is a challenge and an opportunity, and it presents itself to us. And this is a challenge and an opportunity that is the focus of my address tonight. So, with your indulgence, let me explain why we are where we are now. The way our courts and tribunals work in New South Wales has not changed for a very long time. The network is the largest one in Australia. It operates from more than 170 locations with 380 courtrooms in 162 courthouses. It was built primarily in colonial times, and more than half the courthouses were built before Federation. Old courthouses are expensive to maintain, and resources are often just used to keep the doors open. And it's not surprising that because of that, the maintenance backlog across our network is approximately $200 million. Now, make no mistake, there is a lot of sandstone and heritage features to take care of. It's said that the original location of our courthouses across the state was determined by the horse and buggy rule. And this means that the courts should be located one day's horse ride from one another. But now, 85% of the New South Wales population lives within 50 kilometres of the coast, and less than half of our courthouses are located there. In fact, over 60% of all local and district court matters are heard at just 20 courthouses. The majority of them are in the Sydney CBD and in Parramatta. The aspiration of putting people at the centre of our justice system means that courts and tribunals should be welcoming. They should protect vulnerable witnesses, and they should keep the people who visit or work there safe. However, importantly, modern facilities like AVL, audiovisual links, remote witness testimony rooms, and accessible and safe spaces for victims and other witnesses were, as you would imagine, not part of the original courthouse design. And our justice system is still heavily reliant on paper-based manual ways of working and on people attending court in person. Now, when it comes to our criminal justice system, which many of you here are familiar with, working within it, you know, keeping our community safe is a core purpose. That purpose is reflected in our state priorities, including reducing domestic violence, which is one of Premier Mike Beer's personal priorities, reducing reoffending, and reducing violent crime. Gratifyingly, recent crime statistics published by the Bureau of Crime Statistics and Research, known as BOCSR, shows that a majority of offences are stable or trending down. In the 5 years to March 2016, there has been a steady decrease, with robberies down about 50%, motor vehicle theft about 30%, and non-domestic assaults by about 20%. However, our criminal justice system is complex. It's interconnected. And changes in one part of the system, whether it's in police, whether it's in courts or in prison, affect many other parts of the system. And so, an example, more police on the beat can mean more arrests, which means more matters in court. Despite these obvious connections when you point them out, coordination and reform has been piecemeal. And investments into policing have always exceeded investments into other parts of the criminal justice system. Between 2010 and 11 and between 2014-15, recurrent funding for police increased by about 17% in real terms, while for our courts it decreased by about 2%, and corrective services only increased about by the same amount. At the same time, our police, who do an important job, an effective job, have increased their focus on detecting serious crimes, with prosecutions for drug dealing and sexual assault rising by more than 25% since 2011. Serious crimes have more complex evidence and longer trials, so this has contributed to courts having an increased trial workload. Despite these pressures, most of our courts have performed exceedingly well. The local court, which handles about 90% of all criminal and civil cases in our state, remains the best performing court in its jurisdiction across Australia for the ninth consecutive year. Congratulations. And both the Supreme and Coroner's Court have exceptional clearance rates. But this brings me to the District Court, where increased police numbers and their targeting of serious crime, all of which is important, has led to a great deal of work for that court and to subsequent trial delays. And right now, there are almost 2,000 cases waiting to be heard, double what it was a number of years ago. And the time that it takes to finalise cases that go to trial has grown over the last 5 years to just under a year on average. Now just think about it. These delays, what are the impacts? Well, on victims of crime who experience prolonged distress and uncertainty. Witnesses who may forget or not be able to recall vital evidence details. And of course, accused being held in custody on remand, awaiting trial for longer. And so not surprisingly, our prison population has grown. And between June 2011 and September of last year, that number rose by about 18%. The challenges are not limited to the criminal justice system, but they extend to civil justice as well. And this is an area of law I have a particular passion, having worked as a civil lawyer and also having worked in commercial banking overseas. You know, this system primarily deals with what I call everyday legal problems. They're problems that we have with our bank, with our neighbour, with our landlord, with our tenants. These are problems that may seem simple, but actually they're very time-consuming for us as individuals. They are stressful and they can often be costly to solve. In 2012, the Law and Justice Foundation of New South Wales conducted a survey of legal need, and they found that each year around 3 million people in New South Wales, that is half of our New South Wales population aged 15 years and over, have a legal problem. And of these, about 85% were civil law problems, a preponderance of the legal problems in our state. The survey found that people got advice for only half of their legal problems and that they rarely started formal legal proceedings. For almost 20% of those legal problems, people said they took no action at all because it would be too stressful, too expensive, or simply because they didn't know what to do. Everyday legal problems, the ones that I'm talking about here, need to have everyday solutions that are quick, that are simple, that are cost-effective. And when people have disputes about money, the things they buy, the services they receive, the places they live, they should be able to resolve them quickly so they can get on with their lives. So, ladies and gentlemen, a quick snapshot for the case for change in our justice system. You can see it's a strong case. We need to rebalance the criminal justice system with both immediate measures and substantial reform, which I'll talk about in a moment. We also need to give people the information, the services, the tools to solve their civil legal problems. We also need a sustainable asset base with more flexible and innovative ways of providing justice services across our community in New South Wales. As one of my first steps on this journey, I established a Courts Consultation Committee. This committee is chaired by the Chief Justice, the Honourable Tom Bathurst AC, and it comprises all the heads of jurisdiction, representatives of the Bar and the Law Society, the Department of Justice, myself, and I was keen to have an independent member join this group, who's Brian Long, who may be known to you as a company director of some note, and he brings significant financial expertise to this group. Now, this committee convenes We chat informally about issues. It's a way for me getting insight. It's a way for us to share advice as we confront the challenges that I've identified for you here tonight. As I mentioned, the district court's jurisdiction is the one that's most under pressure, and a series of measures have recently been funded by the New South Wales Government to help reduce the delay in criminal trials coming before that court. In December of last year, I announced a $20 million package, which will give us a number of things, but it includes 250 extra sitting weeks over 18 months from this January through to the end of June next year. It will include two new district court judges who were appointed in March of this year, and additional public defenders who are located in Port Macquarie and Tamworth to work across an area that will be broader than that, Armidale, Tamworth, Tyree, Port Macquarie, where the needs for some of these cases to be dealt with more quickly are. Out of last month's budget, I was pleased to announce an additional package of $40 million, which will include three new district court judges, with one specifically based in Wagga Wagga and one in New England, where we know we have delays we need also to address. And again, to complement that judicial resource, more prosecutors and public defenders. So I think taken together, those two packages will make a real difference. Now, while I'm proud that the government of which I'm a part has made a significant boost to funding to address in the right way the district court criminal trial backlog and changes across the criminal justice system that flow from that, there is systematic change that needs to be made. That is essential. And there are several reforms, I'll only touch on two tonight, that are under consideration in this regard. Having heard some cases, or having some cases heard in the local court instead of the district court, is one possible reform. That already happens. They're called table offences. And so moving some jurisdiction from the to the local court and freeing up the district court's time to deal with more complex criminal matters, allowing less complex criminal matters to be dealt and resolved with faster in the local court jurisdiction, is one part of that policy reform solution. Now, this would be possible, I caution, where the local court could continue to impose sentences that are similar to those that are currently imposed by the district court. And where there's a mechanism for the Director of Public Prosecutions working with police to refer those matters that are still serious to the district court. These are safeguards are important because that kind of a mechanism overarching a moving of jurisdiction down to the local court must mean, of course, that the fast justice that we need to put in place where it's appropriate can't be delivered at the expense of a fair justice. Making the criminal justice system fairer, of course, is another challenge. And that's why we're considering changes to the penalties for disqualified drivers. Automatic and lengthy disqualification periods can mean that a penalty is imposed which can be disproportionate to the offence being committed. And vulnerable members in our community, particularly those with few public transport options, pay a very heavy price, and they often re-offend anyhow because of extensive, consecutively based up periods they sign under they suffer under disqualification. And so, you know, we're working through that. I don't have the answers all tonight, but we also have to remember we want to keep our community safe from people who have proven through the justice system that they're not safe drivers. So they're just two policy reform choices that we could develop and consider further. I now want to turn to technology, which I think has a very important role to play in improving access to justice in our state. The rationale behind this, very simply, is to move data rather than moving people, so that legal problems can be resolved more quickly, more easily, more cheaply. For example, online and phone services mean that people who live in remote or regional areas can avoid travelling long distances to a courthouse. We know there's widespread support for these services in regional areas because 9 out of 10 surveyed responses to a survey the Department of Justice conducted said they would be happy to access these services. The New South Wales Online Registry is one of many technological innovations which we've already invested in. And users of that registry can lodge and pay for up to 90 forms across both the criminal and civil justice system. They can view case information, download documents, and view court lists 3 weeks in advance and 1 week in arrears. That registry is now a one-stop shop for the Supreme Court, the Land and Environment Court, our district and local courts. Around 30% of online filings in those courts are done outside court registry opening hours. And up to 5,000 forms are filed electronically each week. More than 300,000 forms have been filed since our online registry opened for business. So using the online registry provides the convenience of accessing a court in your own time and from your preferred location. It can reduce waiting times for listings and turnaround times for document processing. And it means that our court staff who work really hard are freed up to provide the more custom services that people who come to the registries may require. There is also a Search New South Wales Courts List mobile app for Apple and Android devices that won't surprise you. And that's been downloaded over 15,000 times already. Touching on another initiative is online court, and this is a kind of cyber alternative to having people appear multiple times at a court ahead of the final hearing. Through this service, lawyers can make requests and seek preliminary orders such as adjournments and timetabling with the click of a mouse at home after hours. Parties to disputes can enter into a private secure online chat room with a court registrar or a judge to have the matters dealt with before the final hearing. Obtaining directions about the conduct of a case or setting a hearing date are other examples of things that can be dealt with in this very same way. I must say, as I have travelled the state since I've been Attorney General, I have seen the benefits which audiovisual links, or AVL, is providing across our state. It does provide, in real time, greater access to justice. And we have a $40 million AVL project which has led to there being about 400 audiovisual suites through our courts, our tribunals, corrective services, juvenile justice centres, police stations, legal aid offices, the DPP, Aboriginal Legal Services and Multicultural New South Wales. So using AVL can connect people without physically bringing them to a courthouse. We have reduced the need to transport prisoners, juvenile offenders, expert witnesses, interpreters and staff. And it means that police can remain on duty at their base, at the local area command, rather than travelling and waiting to give evidence in court. And to give you an example of how this works in real time, in 2015, witnesses appeared via AVL from France and from New Zealand in a trial at the Goulburn District Court. And expert witnesses from the United States gave evidence via AVL to the Blue Mountains bushfire inquiry, which was held at Katoomba Court. Importantly, AVL has also allowed us to reduce the trauma for victims of domestic violence and sexual assault when they attend court. Victims can use remote witness facilities to give their evidence from another room away from the accused. Imagine how much easier that must be. And speaking of innovation, which the Baird government likes to be at the forefront of, in an Australian first, I'm proud to say, we recently announced a social impact bond to target people released on parole. And this is with the aim of reducing their rate of reoffending. This investment will support a new program, which we're calling On Track, T-R-A-C-C, to provide up to 4,000 parolees with over 5 years of intensive individual support and rehabilitation to help their successful reintegration into the community. New South Wales, you might have noticed, has long been leading the way when it comes to using social impact investment to help address social issues, social challenges facing our community. And I was involved when I was the Family and Community Services Minister with a similar bond that addressed child protection issues. You know, this is a wonderful way to use the expertise of our not-for-profit sector who have real on-the-ground experience with the financial support of private investors who look for, yes, a good financial return, but a good social return from their investment of their money. As I mentioned, our courthouses were built, if I could say it crudely, in a different time to meet different needs. And we will continue, as you are hearing from me tonight, to upgrade the technology in courthouses. Those facilities must also cater for a variety of services. And they need to provide appropriate spaces for formal mediations, suites for lawyers to meet with their clients, and safe spaces for juries, witnesses, and vulnerable people who are appearing before court. Now, these spaces are being incorporated into the designs of our new courthouses, like Newcastle. You know, I encourage you, if you have a chance, to go and have a look at our new courthouse in Newcastle, which is both a district and a local court, and also has tribunal rooms. It is quite something. And I went there, and I was very proud this year to go there and open that facility, because it does tick the boxes: fast, fair, accessible justice in service of our community. It is the largest and the most technologically advanced courthouse across New South Wales. It includes 10 new courtrooms, so it's a sizeable facility, 2 tribunal rooms, I mentioned, high-definition screens for evidence playback and video conferencing, jury rooms, legal suites, safe rooms where victims of domestic and family violence can wait before they're called to give their evidence. And I went to see these rooms, as I try to do whenever I go to these facilities, and they are even thought out to the point of often these victims bring with them young children, and they're fitted out with educational and other toys just to make that experience of the very formal system of justice a little better for the family that come with these victims before our courthouses. I also opened up the $80 million upgrade to Wollongong Courthouse in February. And those facilities, so it's a combination of old and new, include 7 courtrooms, one of which is a heritage courtroom in tribute to colonial architect James Barnett's 1885 original courthouse design. And I saw it, because I have an interest in heritage and the old, of a perfect blend of the old and new. It may also be possible to deliver justice services in buildings other than in our courthouses. And the New South Wales Civil and Administrative Tribunal, we call it NCAT, it is the state's one-stop shop for specialist tribunal services, and you might recall it consolidated 22 formal tribunals. That jurisdiction often sits in a variety of locations, and locations that better match the informality of its proceedings. So those are other ways in which we might think about bringing justice to our community. So being innovative about where and how justice services are delivered are key to improving access to justice across our state. Now, as I said earlier, when I reflected on civil justice, which is the justice that most impacts every one of us in this room, it's about making it easier for people to resolve their everyday legal problems. They can be resolved without legal representation or tribunal or court proceedings. But the Productivity Commission said in its report, which was on access to justice arrangements in 2014, that people don't know what steps to take. They don't know what steps to take. So we are developing a strategy that's going to improve the access to civil justice. And the thinking around civil justice reform goes along 4 themes: data, simple pathways, early dispute resolution, and everyday justice. There has been a lack of data in the civil justice system about the who, the what, the why, the when, the where of civil litigation. And we need evidence for a clear understanding of what people need and what works, so then we can make good decisions. We are in the very early days of that discovery. In particular, we need to know who's litigating, why they're litigating, what are the amounts of money they're litigating for, and what are the outcomes they get. Does that match their expectation? What we do already know is that it is essential for everyone to be able to understand what their rights are and what options are available to them to use those rights. The government's free online phone service, which is called Law Access, provides information and referrals for people who have a legal problem. And this is a great starting point that I believe works really well, but we can make it much better. And so the Department of Justice is working on an upgrade to Law Access, and it's going to provide clear and practical solution pathways for two of the most common everyday legal problems around housing and around recovering debts. American lawyer and civil libertarian Clarence Darrow once quipped that justice has nothing to do with what goes on in the courtroom. Justice is what comes out of the courtroom. That is justice serving the community. And so I believe allowing people to solve as best they can their own problems with assistance from Law Access so they can reach an outcome sooner, with less expense, of course, is the aim. I would really like to think that Law Access at some point will be as simple as a mobile phone app that people will tap into to find the pathways to resolve their everyday legal problems. Now, when there are civil disputes, they can often escalate, and it can be because people don't communicate early enough with one another when that dispute arises. The government can support the early resolution of disputes, for example, by adopting a policy of having legal proceedings as a last resort where it's possible. And the New South Wales government already has a model litigant policy, which provides all of us guidance on best practice for government agencies in civil litigation matters. However, I believe we can extend the reach of such a policy to other parts of government. Local councils, for example, are responsible for 35% of all the civil disputes in local court. And more than 80% of those claims are for $2,000 or less. That's an amazing thing, $2,000 or less. So, you know, early dispute resolution policies that are beyond ministerial and government departments could require agencies such as local government to adopt strategies that are more proportionate to the dispute that's meant to be solved, and could lead, I think, to an earlier resolution of disputes, small disputes, but important disputes at minimal cost to all parties. Now, when litigating a civil dispute can't be avoided, and that does happen, people need a court, and they need a tribunal system that's going to serve them well. And as part of the development of the civil justice strategy, we're looking at a range of things that will help make the court and tribunal system more accessible. And I just mentioned two in that regard. One is, for example, implementing online dispute resolution in NCAT, our mega tribunal, and then extending it to uncontentious matters in the courts if it works well in NCAT. You know, this will make resolving legal problems faster. Then it could be improving the service and the support to self-represented litigants. That is, people, as you know, who choose to represent themselves in legal proceedings rather than getting a lawyer to act for them. Now, that may not always be what people choose to do, but if it is, we need to make it easier for those people to participate in solving the legal problem with better knowledge and some support. So, ladies and gentlemen, justice services must be delivered in new, innovative and flexible ways that serve our community better in New South Wales. As you heard, we will continue to add to the services that are online, digital and 24/7. We will provide ways for people to resolve disputes earlier, potentially avoiding the courts and tribunals entirely for some legal problems. We will renew our asset management strategy and make sure our courts and tribunals are actually meeting the needs of the day. And we will continue, as I said, to critically examine and implement reforms required to ease the pressure on our criminal justice system and reduce reoffending. Make no mistake, we are embracing these challenges, embracing these opportunities presented by our justice system. We are proud of the first justice system in Australia, the best justice system in Australia. But, ladies and gentlemen, there is no time to waste. Thank you.
Many thanks to the Attorney General for an important address. I should also say thanks to CAWS Chambers Westgarth for the use of this facility this evening. So we come to question and discussion time. We got to about the top of the hour we needed. I know there are limits to what an Attorney General can do, but obviously one of the problems in the present legal system, which is equivalent, which applies in New South Wales and other jurisdictions, is the length of trials. I've recently reviewed two books for the Sydney Institute Review online. One, the case of John Brian Kerr, who was convicted of murder in Victoria in 1951. Mark Tedeschi's book on the Thorn kidnapping in Sydney 10 years later in the 1960s. Now, the latter case had a lot of forensic evidence. The former case didn't have much, but these were very big cases, and the Thorn case was done in 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. The estimate now would probably be done in 6 months. I mean, is there any way that, and this also applies, of course, in the civil jurisdiction too, where, and this has implications, as you know, for the jury system, where people are asked to turn up in court for a huge amount of time. Is there any way that anything that can be achieved that an Attorney General might do to reduce the length of some of these trials, which seem to go for day after day, often repeating the same evidence?
Mm. Well, you bring an interesting insight to that, Gerard. Thank you for that. So, yes, it is about, you heard me talk about the emergency measures, which are the investment into extrajudicial resources. But there is that work that I didn't explain maybe in as fuller fashion around, you know, callovers. So at least, I suppose, before you're getting to trial, making sure that both parties exchange information so that the trial comes on sooner than it might. So that's kind of one area, to get the trial happening sooner. And then when it happens, I suppose also one of the other reforms we're looking at is to make sure, and again I'm referring, Gerard, to what happens before you actually get into the court, but there's been a lot of work done in the area of getting guilty pleas earlier. And I've looked at some data that indicates to me that there are many pleas of guilty that are taken on the court steps ahead of a long period of custody sometimes for the accused. And if it was known that in fact there would be a plea of guilty to a charge, that trial could have gone on sooner. Now, the next piece of work is exactly the point that you make, which really is in the hands of the encouraging me of judicial officers to look at inside the courtroom and the way that cases are conducted. Are there better ways in which those cases can be run? Now, this is a system of which I'm very proud. The hallmark of a judicial system and Attorney General is you have many stakeholders, none of whom are directly answerable to you. And in fact, the independence of the system and all of those players is a hallmark of what serves our community very well. So it can be a generous and polite and gentle encouragement on the part of the judicial leaders in our system to look at how it is when things are before the courts. Does it involve a change to evidence laws? Does it involve a legislative change to procedural law? Are there things more informally that we could be asking of our judicial officers and their heads of jurisdiction in how trials are conducted actually inside the court when they come to that point in time? But the work that I'm much more directly in charge of is the point up until then.
Thank you. Give me a chance. My first question is going to planning for the good statistics dispute program. And I would like to know something that it comes in the court. They are, you know, facing injustice as like society, minor religious people. Mm-hmm. They are suffering in different way, different, you know, types of things. That thing doesn't come in the court. So what is the strategy how they can get the real justice?
The question is, what is the strategy, how you get real justice?
But now, that is an important and big question you ask. And can I share something with you? I mean, one of the blessings, I'd say, of being an Attorney General, and I hadn't realised this, I mean, the Premier calls you and asks you, will you serve in a particular role, that I hadn't appreciated with this role, is the first law officer role that an attorney has. And so, you know, the tension with an Attorney General's role is you are both a politician, but you have a role at law, and about a third of the work that I do goes to those issues of matters within the justice system that more go to its purpose of overall justice. One of the things I do reasonably often, which I didn't realise would be a part of this role, is to sit with victims of crime. Some of them may have come before the courts and their families. Others, like you're saying, haven't even made their way into the courts, but they think the justice system, the formal justice system, should serve them better. And they often ask me what it is that you ask, or they make the comment that they haven't received justice in the biggest sense of the word. You know, what I say back to you is that our court system, our formal legal system, is only one part of what people consider and indeed can be justice in the broader sense. When I sit with these people, like I will talk with you after this talk today, you say, well, how could I as attorney, those matters that are in my responsibility, how could I change those so that that formal system of justice serves you better? Because justice in the broader sense that you are talking about is a wider range of things that as community we can do. It may be services on the ground when someone is in trouble. When I worked as fax minister, often that can be homelessness services. When I was fax minister, issues of children and they're growing up in households where they're at jeopardy. So that broader sense of justice is something which I understand because people often ask that of me. And in fact, that can sometimes be a limit of an attorney general, what they can do. But I am conscious that sometimes even that broad sense of justice can't be delivered within the formal justice system, which is my official responsibility.
Thank you very much for the promised reforms and the modernisation of the courts and the system. Perhaps some of the reforms in the federal court could be put into Supreme Court, like case management, etc. But my question was about Indigenous incarceration and the rates of those. My understanding, and please correct me, is that we've got similar problems, particularly in the western parts of New South Wales, Broken Hill and Walgett and so on. Are there other initiatives to try to deal with the problem of too many young Indigenous people ending up in the justice system?
Well, yes, indeed. And that's an issue that I suppose that vulnerability of our Indigenous brothers and sisters is something that extends beyond the justice system to other ways in which education, health services, you know, are delivered to those communities. That's why I'm particularly interested in the driver disqualification reforms, which you might not see the connection, but let me explain. It really is that those disqualifications, because Aboriginal communities can be remote, can more harshly fall on those people. They can, for needs of, you know, employment or training, you know, almost by necessity, although of course it is a voluntary action, get in a car even though they're disqualified and drive. And then an accumulation of those things and the way the system works at the moment for driver disqualification, well, often then they end up in jail when in fact they are just a gradual bringing together of disqualification penalties. And in fact, we have another part of that driver disqualification framework that says, you know, if you've committed a number of offences driving, and they may not be, you know, grievous bodily harm driving or, you know, road rage or some of the kind of the safety issues you might get from driving, there's a habitual traffic offenders penalty that comes over the top. So if you have committed a number of offences and then over a period of time, you know, they accrue, then you are automatically subject to this scheme that adds another penalty on top of that. So, you know, my immediate focus for what I see is a disproportionate penalty, which I do think disproportionately falls on Indigenous community and also people in remote areas of New South Wales that don't have the access to transport, as you heard me say, is to look at that scheme because I think there are good social policy reasons for addressing that. And that's something which, as I said, I'm hoping that I can take forward. Thank you.
In relation to the civil matters, obviously fast, fair and accessible to all is what justice should be. But historically, of course, New South Wales virtually abolished civil legal aid, and instead moved to the American system of no cure, no pay litigation being encouraged. My understanding is that that has clogged the courts, as it always threatened to do. Is this being reconsidered?
So I think your question is about legal aid for civil actions. Can I do a little bit of advertisement for our government? Will you allow me just one moment to say that? Because I'm very proud of the fact, and I'm not the only hallbearer in this remark, that what we have done and sustained is a very strong legal aid commitment to community legal centres, and that's been in the face of lots of pressures and a federal government that at times has walked away in different ways from aid to our community legal centres and to legal aid. But you know, each year on year there is a small increase we dedicate to legal aid, which is about the accessibility of justice. I mean, I've been talking tonight about making justice accessible, you know, by way of making it more informal, taking it out of the courts, making it simpler for people to solve their problems informally, and that is a form of accessibility. But when you really do have a civil legal problem, which is what you're talking about, and you do need legal assistance and you don't want to be self represented, which many of us may not want to be, there is a commitment, but it is a smaller portion of what is always a jealously guarded allocation through the budget process that goes to legal aid. And it is there. Yes, I suppose the view is taken at a policy level of government that what are, you know, resources that are jealously guarded, should a preponderance of it should go to represent people who are in the criminal justice system. It is something that I think we would like to resource better, but if there is that divide between who will be represented, who needs that accessibility to justice, you know, the preponderance that goes to criminal justice participants, and I think it should, but I take your point, it would be very good for those who are in the civil justice system, need a hand, need a lawyer, to be able to have that accessible. But there are, as you know, tests that apply when you get legal aid, when you are litigating civil matters in the court, and it has to reach a threshold of it being, you know, a matter of importance. I'm paraphrasing the legal test there, but it's not just for every matter, of course, that legal aid will be available in the courts.
Question down there.
Yes. Thank you, Attorney General. As you streamline the system, particularly with regard to the civil area, how do you propose to effectively communicate streamlining and the easier access to the general public so that they know automatically when they've had any sort of a small civil problem, they can go instinctively, automatically, to know where to go to sort the problem out?
You're singing my song. Because I think we've got a lot of it there. You know, you've heard me talk about some of the IT and kind of orientation for some of our reforms. When I sit down, and I've got, you know, a fantastic department, the Department of Justice, and I work out, and it takes you a little while as a minister to get to know your department and what's there, and, you know, finally kind of acquire a knowledge where you've got a good base across everything that they cover across the state. You know, I have found that there's a lot that they have that actually makes justice accessible already. But actually what we need to do, we need to communicate it better, and we need to put it in one portal or one place. So literally the question would be, I'm kind of crystal balling here, but if you have a debt problem, you have a legal problem. I think people understand what a legal problem is. It means probably it's a bit more, you might have to go to the courts, or you think there might be some, you know, complicated paperwork around it. And people, I think, have a good sense of that on the whole. That you'd go to the Department of Justice website, and that would be the portal through which you'd be asked some very simple questions, and it would take you in different directions. And some of them might mean that you end up in court, yes, but I, as we know, most people who have civil problems, everyday problems, don't end up in court, and they shouldn't end up in court. But in fact, they should be ending up solving the problems, not walking away because it's too stressful, they don't know what to do, they just give up. That's the bit that concerns me. And so it's about me talking to you tonight about it, and, you know, wherever I can, talking about the fact that, you know, everyday legal problems, it's we should have accessibility around solving them as well for people, because they are 85% of our legal problems in the state. And so what I'm hoping I'll do is I have an opportunity to go around the state and actually, you know, propose something that would work in that really easy, accessible way for people, just a place to go. Kind of akin to the Service New South Wales offices. I think, you know, I hear some, see some nods in the audience here perhaps. I mean, that's worked for me. I was in and out with driver's licence in about 15 minutes. And, you know, Justice is also putting births, deaths and marriages applications there as well. So they've become like the face of government. Now, you know, whether Justice also takes a bigger role in Service New South Wales, or, again, it's online on a website, which most people, you know, whether it's a local library or at home or at work, would have access to a portal. You just provide a way for people to actually track through and be led through what I think are very good services we already have. We just need to sell them better and make people know they're there.
Minister, last Friday, Jared and I were at a 10th anniversary celebration for a volunteer group that was set up by a handful of women. And it's a victims and witnesses support group. It now works through Downing Street, Parramatta, out west somewhere like Orange and somewhere else in Aimingford, Dubbo, whatever. In 1 year, they had 38,000 people go through their assistance. They have about 140 volunteers. Now, they live on nothing. They have to make do with volunteers. They've set up what is an incredibly successful structure, but it seems to me that the only time people really learn about the law is when they have to face some kind of experience in a court. Can't we be looking at ways to use the resources of these people with something that government could support as well to expand these kind of services and make use of a lot of professionals that are volunteering for this group, make use of those kinds of people in a much more constructive way?
So, Anne, thank you for that question. I'm thinking you might have met, I mean, I know the acronym, it's WDV-CAS.
Yes, Peter Thornton, she's one of our members.
So that's because, you know, once you use an acronym, you can never remember what it stands for. Women's Domestic Violence Court Advocacy Services, or Court Advocacy Program, I think is kind of a... So they're an amazing group, and they're actually incredibly astute. And look, you know, again, if I can give you a little bit of picture of what we're doing inside government. So WDV-CAS works in the courts to help women through domestic violence court proceedings. They actually have a broader brief now because we fund them through government. I work closely with them and I visited them across the state. They are a crucial part of what is becoming the way in which we're thinking about domestic violence, which is, you know, sooner and earlier when these issues arise. They often are at the front line of calls that come in for police. So a whole speech would be about kind of the domestic violence framework, which government has invested very strongly in over the last period of years. But a critical part of it for me is this WDV-CAS. So they recently in our budget got a sizable funding envelope. And it was in recognition of what they are helping us do, which has been not only that front line, so when police identify a victim, within 24 hours, WDV-CAS has the responsibility, which is a heavy one, of contacting those domestic violence victims, linking them up with services beyond courts, and also keeping contact with them if indeed it is a matter that gets before the courts. They then work with the victims, as you would have seen at Downing Centre, sitting with them, holding their hands, helping them with their kids. You know, predominantly domestic violence victims are women. I don't want to paint a story where there are, I'm saying they're not men, but predominantly it's women. And they actually provide, you know, the counselling, the wraparound service for the court process. But even more than that, they're now helping us around the state with what we're calling local coordination points, where they form a fulcrum so that there might be a court proceeding tracking here, but actually you want to be taking care of a whole lot of other things. It might be that out of that incident, you know, a woman has fled, her children have come out of school, she's lost housing, she's not well, and so WDV-CAS, provide that kind of coordination role of making sure that when that person is inside the court system, that all those other services come around to wrap around that woman. And they do an amazing job. They're also really good because what people like myself need when you're in government, when people come to you and say, we'd like funding, we've got this great program, and you say, I understand what you do is essential, it's important, I need something more than that to be able to make the case. They are really good on collecting their data. keeping me updated about, you know, the success. And from that comes, guess what? You know, we need more money to be able to meet the demands. But I can't speak them highly enough. They are such a professional network of people and they do such an important job.
Final question. You'll be picked up.
Okay. A great deal of the time of the police, the courts and the correctional system is dealing with people who have a mental illness. Is this an area that you're looking at and thinking about possibly diversion programs, since it seems much more something that health should be handling rather than the justice system?
It's a very good point you make, and I suppose along with domestic violence we have such a heightened awareness now, although probably we understand it still. There's still a lot of understanding to build around what mental illness is and how it manifests itself and how it can help people, because it often can be hidden. But, of course, when people come before the justice system and there's a charge that's laid, there is a mental health assessment that's made of them at that point, and that's a point from which services can be provided. You know, we can always do more in the community, I suppose, for making services even to people who are not part of our criminal justice system more readily available for them, and have conversations, noticing amongst our work colleagues whether there are issues. I mean, there are also matters of privacy as well, but talking openly about the issue I think is part of it. Within the system itself, what we need to do, and the Corrective Services Minister as well as a part of this work, is when people are within the justice system, making sure that, particularly when they're on remand. Now, that means, you know, they're going to trial, but the trial hasn't come up. And I mentioned how we have the backlog there. So there are people on remand waiting longer and longer periods to get before the courts to have their day in court and be sentenced. During that period, I think we can do and we will do a better job of providing services around that person in that point, because they get some of those services when they're sentenced and they go into custody formally and they're categorised and a full assessment's made of them. I think where we have a gap, which we're looking to address, is when they're in that remand situation, and there are often mental health and other health issues related to why they're there, sometimes not. That's where there's a piece of work that our government will do, because it's important.
Attorney General, many thanks. Look, I know there are other questions here, but we always try to finish on time, and we're right on time. So I'd just like to say thanks to Gabriel Upton for coming along tonight. Being Attorney General and Australia's largest state is a pretty busy job, and we're grateful that you could find time to come here tonight and talk to us. And also look at the whole issue of how justice, and as you point out, we have a very good legal system in Australia and a very good legal system in New South Wales, but as Attorney General you're saying it can serve us better than it currently does, and you've gone through the various ways that you're looking at in your current role, which you took over about a year ago. So I hope you'll come back one time in the future, but for now, thanks for tonight and well done. Thank you.
You have been listening to the Sydney Institute podcast. This podcast is proudly brought to you through the support of Microsoft Australia. We hope you enjoyed listening and can join us again soon.